Mary Harrison from the National Council of Jewish Women's Oral History. And this is the September
18.
We're at the home of Professor Moshe or Maurice Shapiro. And this is tape 5, side 1. When we talked last week, you mentioned the Iraq coup 20 years ago. Did you want to go into that again, or you were?
It probably was mentioned in light of what is happening today, but that was the overturn of King Faisal and the monarchy, and that was the origin of. What is today, with the exception, of course, of Saddam Hussein, then later on, I'm not sure who overturned Faisal. It wasn't Saddam Hussein. He came later. In a coup, the Ba'ath Party overturned the regime that was established after Faisal was. After the monarchy was in.
Okay. Last week, you mentioned health care for the black community. Could you, I don't think we went into that.
Oh, no. Well, I should have brought, or I can give you some material if you wish. At the time, of the growing consciousness, the growing consciousness of the injustice that has occurred over time. The university in general, University of Pittsburgh, was given not instructions, but by the chancellor at that time, was given advice to undertake whatever they felt in different departments and different schools, whatever they felt was appropriate in order to contribute to the removal of that injustice.
Who was the chancellor?
It was Paswell already at the time.
Okay.
In the School of Public Health, of course, the questions related to health care and provision of access to good health care was one of the areas in which interest and capability of addressing the problem was available. And we started a course. I just happened to be going through my old papers, and may be of interest to give them to you later on, because I'm going to throw them out about this course.
No, I'd like to have those.
As to what happened. And, actually, it was developed by a group of faculty members, and Dr. Waldo Truding, at that time the head of the Department of Public Health Practice, was very much in favor of the course, and it went through all of the requirements for course approval, and it was a very interesting course, and it brought together people who otherwise wouldn't have been brought together in terms of addressing these kinds of problems. The director of the course was a Dr. Walter Burke. I think his name was Walter, but it's B-U-R-K-E. He was a black physician in Pittsburgh who later got into some problems with, in relation to methadone treatment. I remember that happened in the 70s. This was in the 60s. The course then, the course is not offered anymore, but...
Why?
I really don't know. Probably just lost its original luster, and the needs change. And now, in the School of Public Health, there's an Institute of Health Policy, which deals with all aspects of healthcare and health policy. I presume, in a sense, that kind of an organization overtook the need for a special force of that nature.
Are you satisfied with that? I mean, do you feel that that's enough? Or?
Well, no, I have not been involved in community health practices in the past few years since I moved into the Department of Industrial Environmental Health Sciences, so I'm not personally aware of what is going on in community health services in this area. I'm willing to wager that there are activities going on.
Dr. Burke was the only black participant in this program? Were there others?
Oh, no, there were students involved.
Black students?
Yes. It was a complete mixture of students.
Okay. One of the questions that we have here has to do with your professional life, and would you like to talk about any significant achievements that you've had? Or?
Well, I think I talked already. Well, I presume my most the one of which I would say I'm most pleased with is the development of environmental health in the School of Public Health. After all, that's the area to which I devoted the better part of my professional life. And that has evolved, and it grew and waned, and now is in a presume in a completely different era of development, simply because times have changed and conditions have changed, both locally in Pittsburgh and in the world, and in the country and the world. And therefore, the next 30 years will be a different environmental health program. But in a sense, the foundations, which go back, quite far back in terms of really started in Great Britain in terms of in the Industrial Revolution era and the kinds of developments in knowledge of the existence of the relationship between the environment and community health grew up at that time. It grew up subsequently here in this country after the turn of the century primarily, and then blossomed between the two world wars to arrive at both means of instruction of people in the profession and their working at it in the field, in, both in health departments and in industry and in the private consulting era. It's a interesting times and problems that arose in relation to the professional controversies that occurred between engineers and physicians, for example, in relation to environmental health. By and large, I think those that existed in the between war periods and maybe just before World War I, when the question of economics in relation to the manner, for example, in which communities discharge and dispose of their waste versus the health aspects of them were points of controversy. it's interesting to note that today these kinds of controversies are not between really so much engineers and physicians as between the environmental activists and the engineers, for example, or those who would be affected by the need to control environmental contaminants and the means by which you do it and the cost of which.
Is that a competitive thing or?
No, it's a philosophical difference as to what the risks are, what the level of risks are, what the relationship is between conditions in the environment and the conditions of the health of the community, in which areas really there is an evolving body of knowledge which didn't exist before. And you have to remember that until this, what I would call the chemical and physical era, has arrived, the primary concern was biological, in the sense of pathogenic organisms, their dissemination into environment, the exposure of individuals to these pathogenic organisms, and the consequent disease that occurs in the community. Now it's that, of course, and we've had no better lesson to learn that any time you abandon the biological environment and claim to have gained mastery over it, you are bound to be very sadly come to a realization that as it isn't true, and that's the AIDS epidemic, which just shows that anyone who thinks you've conquered the biological desert at his own peril or the community's peril. And so that, I use that as an example, AIDS is not an environmental aspect.
Isn't it a phenomenon of the development of man? Or?
We don't know yet. I certainly don't know what caused this virus all of a sudden to become, if it is all of a sudden, it may have been dormant, but the manner in which it has reached man or people, humanity.
Professor, I wanted to ask you one thing that comes to my mind now. With all the work that was done, then we had the end of the Second World War, and the way we proceeded to end the war with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And would you like to comment on that?
Well, and the analysis point, it's not obviously not my field. I don't think that World War II was ended by the bomb of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It really ended just before that. There's a lot of controversies,
right,
obviously, as to whether it should have been dropped or not. And whether.
Would you like to express an opinion?
I just read about it recently more than before. I was prone to accept the contention that before that it was doing that act or having to invade the islands of Japan with the tremendous loss of life that will occur. Reading recently, there are obviously some iconoclasts who don't believe that, saying that there is good evidence. I suppose time will tell that the Japanese were far more ready to sue for peace before the bomb was exploded, and would have been even more so later on. And there's a, second guessing kind of a thing is very difficult, and I really have no capacity to do it. You with hindsight, you can say it, it's a shame that it had to be dropped. But to say that you're sure that it did not save lives, or that you're sure that it did save lives, I think that is a kind of a conundrum that maybe history will be able to unravel.
How do you view your accomplishments, successes? What do you view as your most significant accomplishments in retrospect? Is there something you would do differently? Is there anything in your life you wish you could have changed?
To start out with, what this is a two-part question.
Yes, three or four.
The one part, I presume, that having stayed in academic life, despite the fact that I did not prepare myself, that was not my professional preparation. As I think I told you in the beginning, it was because I was invited to come to Pittsburgh, and in that sense,
mm-hmm.
I took the challenge, and the notion of being involved with a person like Dr. Perrin was obviously both a challenge and an honor. So that I think pride or something like that took it over, rather than staying out on the West Coast. In that light, really, the most meaningful from my point of view, looking back, is working with the students. And even though there weren't, it wasn't a legion of them, but we were a small group, but I'm still in touch with a goodly number of them, both those in the local area and those in the national and international scene. And it's always a very great satisfaction to know what they're doing and to know their successes. And their successes are their own. What we had to do as educators was working with them and maybe helping them get on a path that would do it, but what they have done is based upon their own capabilities.
Would you do anything differently?
Now, looking back, no, but it was just happenstance. I mean, if Dr. Perrin had been given other names, or he decided that one of his former co-workers in the public health service, where he was Surgeon General, would have done better as the that call at that time the Senator Engineering Assistant Professor, I wouldn't have been here. I was offered, interestingly enough, I was offered another position, and that was at the University of Arizona. I was not offered the position. I was told of it and asked if I wanted to apply for it. However, the salary at that time there was just nowhere near that we couldn't have afforded to live. So that I didn't.
So that was a.
That was.
Could you give me a sort of a little capsule of how Pittsburgh has changed, how it was yesterday and how it is today?
Oh, well, I think I told you
about the smoke, the ecological.
Didn't I tell you also about my first interview in Pittsburgh? Did I tell you about that?
Yes.
About the university club, right? So
no, university club. Okay, fine. No.
I think I did.
Thank you.
Well, that is one kind of difference, if nothing else, that the former dean of the School of Public Health, Dr. Seltzer, was a member of the University Club. And so that in 30 years you can...
It has changed.
To 40 years you can see what kind of changes. When we arrived in Pittsburgh in 1951, my perception was of really a two-layer social strata city, probably more so than many other communities in the United States, certainly in the Northeast, with a very thin layer of middle class in between. So you had the blue-collar workers, the miners, the steel workers, the other manufacturing workers as one layer, and then the corporate heads and the rather wealthy at the upper layer, and a very thin layer in between. The manifestations were that there were the only real eating establishments were the clubs, either the Duquesne Club on the one hand, or the Teutonia Monochor, the German, or the Bulgarian Club, or the Croatian Fraternal Union on the other hand, and very few other eating establishments to which anyone could go. It had an interesting, already in the sense of the cultural life, the Pittsburgh Symphony was here, and the beginnings of the Pittsburgh Opera were already here, so that at the beginning, in the 50s, when we still lived out in Ingomar, we bought a subscription to the Sunday series of the Symphony, the Pittsburgh Symphony, and my wife Ann and I would rotate by my taking one of the children on one Sunday afternoon, and she would take another child on the next Sunday afternoon. And that was one major kind of cultural activity on our part. In terms of theater and that, there was the Nixon Theater, which brought in Broadway shows, but there was no widespread community theater at the time. Well, in the interim period from the 50s until the 80s and now in the 90s, there's been a night and day change. And as I indicated, that I was offered the position of Deputy Commissioner of Health of New York City, and a very tempting kind of position with an academic attachment as well, so that I wouldn't have lost my academic by that time roots. That one of the kind of consideration was, well, what would you gain culturally if you went to New York? Well, obviously, if you could afford and afford the time and the money, plate from which to choose was much fuller than in Pittsburgh. But our decision was that things were going to such an extent that they were sufficient for us, and that in reality we probably would not have been able to afford a subscription to the Metropolitan Opera, for example, and just to use it as an example. So that by the mid-60s, things had changed so much in those 15 years that they were becoming really sufficient. And since that time, we have had no regrets on it whatsoever.
Did you notice anything politically different?
In Pittsburgh or mm-hmm. in Allegheny County? Well, I was not involved so much in Allegheny County that I knew of the politics. Well, of course, it's changed, it changed both substantively and also with the players. There's no charismatic player like or Lawrence was.
But his things are still in the works, aren't they?
Yeah, his legacy is still going on. I think both philosophically and in actuality, in the sense of collaboration. Although there still are kinds of problems that maybe an individual like him could attack extant at this time.
All right. How do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community? I know that you already mentioned that you're not that you don't belong to any particular.
Right, but when I first arrived, due to my background and profession, it didn't take long for me to join what was then the fledgling American Technion Society chapter in Pittsburgh. And that was a really very bright time, I think, in terms of what was going on. Mm-hmm. There was a group of young professionals and scientists who had come to Pittsburgh to work at Westinghouse, to work at the university, and at that time, Carnegie Tech. And there was an enthusiasm that was hard to beat, and it was both in assisting monetarily as much as people could, but more than that, it was project-oriented, and people gave their time and talent to develop instrumentation. People like Dr. Jerry Rosenberg went on a sabbatical there. The late Blocky was a judge. He was a relative of the judge who died. President Ellenbogen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The late, really my best friend at the School of Public Health, also went to Israel in a sabbatical. He unfortunately died unexpectedly on his way back from Israel of a heart attack.
Was that a doctor?
He was a relative of the judge, a distant relative, but he not from Pittsburgh.
Can't think of his first name. What kind of scientist was
it? Biochemistry. Came here from Harvard. A brilliant young man. I will get it. Anne will remember. I'm blocking. It's not that I
That's okay.
That group really worked tremendously. Now, obviously, Technion needs as much money as anything else, and especially at this time, so that I have not been involved in it. My hand was involved in the women's
That became a program. Pretty active group, the women's group.
Yes, it still is.
It was sort of the in thing to do for a young matron at that time, and I think that's how they got a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, it was, and it was not only well-intentioned, but I think produced... did something.
Oh, yes, it did, and it had a very interesting group of people involved with it. That's my recollection.
Well, in the beginning, in the 50s, it was all of us, and then we brought in, community people other than the newcomers, people who had been here before. And it's continued, and it's effective in a different way than it was effective at that time. We have always, had friends. Most of our friends, of course, are in the Jewish community, and many of them from blocking all names. The school is named after her. Florence Reisenstein, or people of that nature. We got to know socially and enjoyed extremely and very greatly. There were old Pittsburgh residents in the professions who, through the School of Public Health, became interested. The one in particular, which we've enjoyed a relationship right until this time, is our former dentist until he was retired. That's Dr. Sussman and his wife. And his wife was extremely active in the community, working with the Health and Welfare Federation in rather important positions, and extremely effective, is not only active but effective.
What was Florence Reisenstein's husband's name? Do you remember that? Because I think he was a pretty prominent person in the community.
He was quite prominent.
Yes, and I'm
but not in the same way she was, well, interestingly. I mean,
she was Woman of the Year, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a phenomenally